If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Adam Pranica.
I am your other host, Benjamin R. Harrison.
Ben, we are waist deep in our West Coast tour plans.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about it so far?
I'm really excited about this tour. It's been like a lot more work than I think we either of us anticipated getting it ready. And I don't know, like I guess this will come out like kind of close to when the tour starts, right?
I think so.
Yeah, it's been, I'm just getting really excited thinking about like actually going and doing this in front of people.
We've got some real fun surprises also. I think the poster thing might be one of my favorite parts of this whole deal. Mm-hmm. This tour poster is outrageous. And we've only seen like proofs, so they aren't like the finished designs, but holy shit, like the concept might be not safe for work for hanging in your cubicle, but maybe a little bit of gaff tape will help you out there.
Sure, yeah, a little Dutch out some of the more racy elements of the
because when you think of us and imagery of us, that's definitely where the mind goes, right?
Yeah, so if you want to come see us do this for the first time, I'm sure it will be memorable, and I think it'll be pretty fun.
Like everything you do for the first time, it's going to go great. All parties are going to be satisfied.
It's
something you'll remember fondly forever. So we're going to be doing this a lot, but you definitely don't want to miss the first ones.
Yes.
If you're in the environs of Seattle or Portland or the San Francisco Bay Area,
it's going to be hot.
Yeah. With that, I think we should probably turn the page over to the episode we're going to be reviewing today, Ben.
Yeah, let's
do that.
That's
Season 4, Episode 9, The Final Mission.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So, Wesley's in big trouble, Adam. That is how this episode starts. He's been called up to the bridge. He's, like, late. And he's trying to stumble over some chicken shit excuse, and Picard is having none of it.
Because I can assure you that will not go down well at Starfleet Academy.
Yes, sir, I'm aware of that.
You get a real reversal of emotion
in
one Will Wheaton at that moment.
The Academy?
This scene is directed by M. Night Shyamalan. A twist beginning, Adam.
Yeah, Wesley drops his coffee mug in slow motion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's made by Starfleet Academy Mug Company.
Yeah. Oh, man. Just seeing that milky coffee go into the pile on the carpet there. Tragic.
Yeah.
That's not going to come out easy.
You hope they've scotch guarded that bridge carpet.
Yeah. It's definitely been replaced at least once since this mission started, right?
Yeah, and you can definitely see all the places that they've wheeled desk chairs across it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not great. That's why all the angles are up, have you noticed? Like, they're trying to shoot up towards the top of the horseshoe whenever they can.
Yeah. Well, that, and it just gives Captain Picard that masculine attraction.
You know what? You bring up a good point. with that. I know you were joking, but shooting people up is often their worst angle. And yet they do it to Patrick Stewart all the time to show Worf in the background in bridge scenes.
Yeah.
How does it work for him and it works for so few other people? Well, is he just a better looking person?
He is, yeah, definitely that. But I think also I've read that some directors think men look better looking up at them and women look better looking down at them. And it's like because men are taller on average than women thing that they theorize that's true. But yeah, as a leading man like Patrick Stewart, you definitely got to keep your nose hair game in check.
Well, that, and you've got to keep the chin out.
Yeah.
Like it really forces you to do that because you get the meat beard look if there's some soft chin there.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great point. We definitely haven't talked about that. So they don't have much time to bathe in the happy emotions with Wesley getting accepted to the Academy because Evolution's worst mistake gets up on the FaceTime and says that her planet is under attack by some unknown ship. This is a woman this is maybe the most loaf we've seen on a character yet.
She's definitely on Mount Loaf. we're getting pretty close to Halloween here, Ben.
Yeah.
As at the time of this recording, I think the episode will come out far after. But she struck me as someone who had walked into a silly string spiderweb.
Do you want to hear my Halloween costume?
Okay.
I'm going as...
Sexy
Wesley Crusher.
Wesley, the boy.
The boy. Young Wesley Crusher.
My son.
That's great.
Yeah. I told my wife that, and it's as close as we've ever come to not still being married.
Is this a couple's costume situation where she will be dressed as heroin golf video game?
I think she's going to be dressed as sexy, embarrassed wife.
That's a costume that you can wear the entire year through.
Yep, pretty much. Yeah, she didn't have to go to Ricky's and pick up any special accoutrement. She had everything already in her closet.
Did you have everything already in your closet for sexy Wesley?
I bought a Wesley sweater.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm gonna like do my hair Wesley-ish and make myself a little Starfleet badge.
Oh man, that is a lot of Depp brand hair gel, Ben. And you better buy two.
Utah, give me two.
Yeah. The kid uses some gel.
So, at this point, we've arrived at a choice. You've got a planet in trouble, asking for help, and you've got a diplomatic mission.
Yeah, we haven't really said what the diplomatic mission is, have we?
No, I guess not. So, the episode starts with Picard recording a log about how he's on his way out to mediate a dispute between miners. And that's the story before they get this distress call from the planet.
And he's got to be pretty nervous about this because we know that Captain Picard is very uncomfortable around miners. Yeah, so Picard is gonna hop in a shuttle with Wesley and go deal with this. And the Enterprise is off to sort out the strange ship attacking the planet.
Does it seem like one of these is more important than the other, Ben? Because I sure think mystery ship attacking a planet probably takes precedence over cranky miners.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that they're like...
Get yourself a ship that can do both? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, and they're like, you know, Picard doesn't need to be here for mystery ship. Like, Riker can handle a situation like this, so... And you know, like, they don't even need to spare a Previa. Like, they've got, like, Picard's getting a ride, you know?
Yeah, and this is, like, the gypsy cab from Royal Tannenbaum's level shuttlecraft. It's a total jalopy.
Yeah.
And the captain of the jalopy we will come to know as Captain Durgo.
Yeah.
Who is very sure to use the word captain when he refers to himself and his ship.
Yeah, Durgo has, like,
a industrial size inferiority complex. And, you know, Picard is very, like, cool about Durgo, but, you know, we know who the big dick is, and Durgo really, it really eats Durgo up that he's going to be ferrying this greater man around.
If you called an Uber and the app said your driver is Durgo and this is the car that showed up, I think you'd cancel the ride, right?
Yeah, I mean, his shit is looking pretty rough. Like, it's definitely got, like, it's definitely like that car that you see driving around where there's, like, a primer door because they got in a wreck. And, like, yeah. there's some evidence of the wreck on, like, the side panel, but they only had enough money to replace the door, and it's, like, a different color from the rest of the car.
I one time got into an Uber that had towels across the back seat and smelled of vomit. Yeah. And I didn't cancel the ride like I should have.
You're a hero. Your Uber rating should be 6.
Well, it's I found myself feeling a great amount of similarity to Captain Picard here because he goes through with the mission too.
Yeah.
He gets in that car.
So let's talk about Durgo a little bit. He's got kind of a like a Halloween store level Han Solo costume on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got, like, a smattering of loaf, I would say. Like, they used most of the loaf up on the lady at the beginning. So
yeah.
They just had, like, a little bit left to give him some eye loaf or whatever. But he's, like, not much of an alien, right?
They told him, they're like, look, we, as far as building character, we can't loaf you out. So you're going to have to play big. And that's what he does.
And Picard and Wesley get down there, and they're in the shuttle bay, and Geordi, like, he's, like, on a mechanics creeper coming out from under the under the shuttle, and he's, you know, shammying off the grease on his hands, and he's like, man, this thing is ship shape. Good to go. Like, it ain't pretty, but it's put together good. And he's like, by the way, I noticed your maneuvering thrusters are a little weird, Durgo. And he's like, oh, yeah, I wouldn't worry about that.
He says foreshadowingly.
Yeah. And so they're like, all right, great. We're all feeling great about this. And Durgo offers Picard a seat at Ops. And Picard's like, nope, I'm going to take this opportunity to big dog you and Wesley. And I'll be sitting in the back reading an ancient book. And Wesley will help you.
One of the great devil big doggings right here. It's like a... It's like a trick shot in pool that he sets up where he strikes the cue and knocks two balls into the corner pocket at the same time.
Real nice.
Yeah, he's the best.
Yeah, they take off from the Enterprise and they're flying in the shuttlecraft, and it really does not take long before the shuttlecraft completely loses control and they're getting bangers left and right.
There's a fun moment where Picard grabs a handhold and the handhold falls out in his hand.
Yeah.
Did you notice that part? That was great.
Kind of reminded me of that inanimate carbon rod from The Simpsons. Yeah, like they had fun making this ship a dumpy, like a dumpy interior as well as exterior. Like when Picard comes in from the back compartment, he throws the door open, and then Wesley is over there like trying to use the computer behind the door, and he can't get the door to like stay shut. Which I thought was really fun. Like, that was definitely designed into the set. Like, what if the latches on the doors are even kind of shitty on this ship?
Yeah, I like the imperfect interactions.
Yeah, because I mean, that really like sets it apart from the average, you know, Enterprise door, which, you know, doesn't even lock, but it's you know, it's definitely going to open and then close.
It really, they glide so smoothly.
Yeah,
it's a real dream.
But they manage to,
now when you install Enterprise door casements, you want to make sure to have all four corners completely level. That way the door slides freely.
I like to put the hinges on the door before you hang the frame. That way, you can be 100% sure that you're square on all four corners. We're using two pin hinges, Now, most spaceships would use a sliding door here, but because this is a piece of shit spaceship, I'm like doing Australian all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Ugh. Forget about that.
All right. This scene made me think about how similar depicting a plane crash is from a shuttlecraft crash.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, the terminology is very similar. We're going down. We've got to pull up before we hit the planet.
Right.
Like, it seems like they're out in the middle of space, and then they are like looking for a place to ditch pretty fast.
Yeah.
Wes is on the computer. He's dialing up. He's dialing up the map of where they're at.
Yeah.
Looking for Class M places to dump it.
They're in like a system that has a bunch of planets and a bunch of moons, and they got to pick one that will sustain humanoid life, because otherwise, no bueno. Can't put that thing down in a gas giant.
Yeah, and in a pinch, Wes finds one. He's like, it's super hot, but it's the best I can do in the moment. And so they aim the nose for planet desert, and they take her in.
Brace yourself for impact.
They put it down like pretty soft, considering, like, I mean, the ship is like it all in one piece. Like, there's no field of wreckage behind them. They didn't like skid it to a stop or anything. They just like literally set it down right side up on the desert floor. And
we were deprived of an exterior,
yeah,
of the shuttle going through the atmosphere or punching into the sand. Like, we don't get any of that. It's a fade to white, Ben, which is, as an editor, a real nice crutch to have.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't hate that. I imagine it would have been pretty tricky to build a miniature that had a plausible-looking retro rocket and then shoot that,
yeah,
setting down on the ground. But it's a classic, dissolve to sun, like in Spaceballs.
Yeah.
And then, they're like hopping out of the hatch on the top of the craft. And Picard is already like, he's going down the like Boy Scout checklist of, you know, we need to find shelter from the sun. This thing is going to serve like an oven. We need to get food, water, rations, something to protect our heads. Like, it's fun, you know?
He's like, Durgo, grab the big box of granola bars that every shuttlecraft should have. And Durgo's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, I have nothing but these rags and the porn magazines that I keep in the footwells. So I got nothing.
Yeah. And Picard is like, well, there's some mountains over there. I say we make for those, and we should gather all the provisions that we can before we head out. And kind of like, oh brother, where art thou? There's a great like, who put you in charge scene between Durgo and Captain Picard, and Picard is like,
well, Pete, I figured it should be the one with the capacity for abstract thought, but if that ain't the consensus view, then hell, let's put her to a vote.
God, I love that scene.
Picard really kung fu's Durgo a little bit, like uses his aggression against him.
I think you're thinking of Aikido.
Oh, yeah, that is what I'm thinking of. Anyway.
Yes, and.
He soft plays his big dog against him and is like, no, man, I'm not going over your head. What do you think we should do? And gets him to sort of agree to the course of action.
Yeah.
In a weird way that satisfies him.
Yes. It's some masterful leadership on Picard's part, because he's like, he's dealing with like Wesley, who is all too eager to defend him and kick shit on Durgo whenever Durgo resists. And Picard is like, slow your roll, Wesley. Like, I'll handle this. Like, I can make this guy my worker. It's just going to take, like, you're not playing it right, essentially.
The great leaders, like Picard, always make their subordinates feel like they have some sort of control over their life when they don't. And this is a great example of that.
Yeah. I mean, Wes is being a baby. Like, every time Durgo says something to counter countermand something Picard says, Wesley is like,
if you want to get out of this, I suggest you listen to Captain Picard. He's the one who's going to keep us alive.
Thank you, that's enough.
He scrappy-doos him.
Yeah, yeah. And Picard like has to hold him back, you know?
It shows how deep the pathology goes between them.
Yeah, but I was also thinking, like, this is the episode in which we're saying goodbye to Wesley. And they wrote this part for him in this where he is kind of super immature. And I felt like he'd matured a lot in, like, over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a surprising tone, I think.
Before we get off this scene, which we are just beating to death with a shovel.
Yeah, this is a 35-second scene that we've been talking about for a good 5 minutes.
Picard's listing all the things that he needs and wants before this trip to the mountains. And the last thing he throws in, almost like a throwaway comment, is we've got to breathe through our noses to prevent dehydration.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, is this a real thing?
I've lived my life under the assumption that it's a real thing.
Picard's like, lucky for you guys, I brought my little billfold full of breathe right strips.
It is a guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Now, you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth. You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
We get off this scene with one of the great desert montages. Again, very Spaceball-like. We get our single brass instrument. That's doing the music bed for this walk. You get a lot of those like three shot intercuts of far away, medium, and close, like really long 30-second dissolves between each of them.
Yeah, somebody
like all the tricks.
Somebody came with the Hollywood checklist of how to shoot a walking across the desert scene, and they hit every single point on the checklist.
Yeah. Guys, we've got to do a tilt off of the sun. Check. We've got to show like the heat waves from people being far away in the desert. Check. We've got to put towels around these actors' heads. Check.
So we cut to the Enterprise in orbit of this planet, and it's like a blue and green Earth-looking planet, and there's this big like dirty brown barge ship in orbit of it, and the Enterprise has like positioned itself between the barge and the planet, and this barge is like mega radioactive. It's not lethal for the planet yet, but they're like, yeah, like it's starting to cause ill health effects, and if it's up there much longer, we're pretty much fucked. And the trick is they want to move the barge out beyond the asteroid belt in this system. But if the Enterprise gets close enough to tractor it, they won't be able to, like, there's so much radioactivity that their shields will be useless against it at the proximity that they would need to be to tractor beam it. It's one of those things where it's like, they have conveniently left out, like, what the shields are capable of with radioactivity and what the tractor beam's range is and a bunch of other factors that, are like, well, all right, I guess we'll just take your word for it that this is really a problem.
There's a level of trust you have in Geordi's take on things at this point.
Yeah.
You really don't have anyone else to ask.
This whole storyline is about forcing, like, you know, they're like dealing with this as they discover the news that the ship that was carrying Wes and Picard never showed up at the mining colony. And so Riker is, like, again forced to make this decision between the Enterprise and its captain. And, you know, it's, like, at this point, it's just a reflex. He's like,
fire.
We're doing the Enterprise. Like, don't even...
He's getting really good at sacrificing Picard's life.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So, this to me, Adam, was a classic episode of why not separate the ship and put the saucer section on garbage scow duty and warp back to do search and rescue with the star drive section.
I mean, ordinarily I would agree with you, except the saucer section is full of kids.
Are the kids like chained to the saucer section? They can move them. There's elevators. Just be like, hey kids, get on the star drive section. you know, play in Holodeck 3 for a while. We're gonna go do some search and rescue. Skeleton crew on the saucer.
I know, man. I'm with you. I was of this thinking when they were about to get on Durgo's jalopy. Like, why not separate the saucer right then and there and take the saucer to the mining colony and send Star Drive section over to the garbage scow?
Yeah, I mean, they would have, but Geordi was just so impressed with how this ship was set up and how ship-shape it was.
Right, yeah.
He was just dying to get Picard on board of it.
It's important to have a mechanic you can trust.
Yeah.
And I think the jury's still out on Geordi.
Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, he's not, like, constantly trying to insist that they need the fan belt replaced. On the other hand, definitely made some dubious calls, W/R/T, shuttle safety.
He's like, look, guys, you could separate the saucer section, but I haven't had a chance to spray the underside with the special rust-proofing material. Like, I mean, you can do it if you want, but I wouldn't recommend it. We have got to push through the end of this episode. We are dragging our feet, Ben.
Yeah. All right, so as they get across the desert, they get into this system of caves, and they discover this water fountain.
For our Midwest viewers, it's a bubbler.
This bubbler is a big problem.
Well, they do that thing where they see where people who have been walking through the desert see a mirage, and they go running headlong into the water. And I think it's Durgo that does it. He gets like thrown across the room as soon as he tries.
Durgo has at this point revealed that he's been hoarding the booze. He's got he's got like a giant flask of tequila that he's been sipping off, and Picard is like, "You fucking idiot. Alcohol is a diuretic. You're making yourself more thirsty, not less." It's like a classic dumb guy retort. "I'll take my chances."
"I'll take my chances" guy in this situation is always the one to die first.
He gets rocked back by this force field, and the entire rest of the episode is based around this force field situation, because like they've angered something in the rocks, and part of the rocks being angry meant that several of them were going to get dumped on Wesley's head, and Picard did that classic thing in television where he runs and pushes a potential victim out of the way, and then instead of keeping running, stops in that spot and looks up at the falling rocks. He catches several rocks to the dome and body, and he's got like a broken arm and a broken leg, and he's got a big gash on the top of the dome piece, and he's in bad shape. He's definitely like concussed and in just generally very rough shape, and You can tell things are bad because his uniform is real dirty and Wesley's hair is all unkempt at this point. I mean, they're stressing.
You can tell that he's in really bad shape in one other important way, which is they don't rest his head on anything soft. Like, his head is resting on a rock. It's pretty fucked up. I think if I were Picard, that's the first thing I would ask for. Be like, "Man, my leg and my arm really hurt right now, but also you think you could grab the turban I was wearing and maybe..."
"Yeah, you know all those head rags we had?"
"Yeah, could you find one of those, please?" God,
they don't treat him super well here.
"My love is a fever, long in jail for that which longer nurse the disease.
So Picard is slipping away. The Enterprise is like not having a great time trying to move this garbage scow. They like try putting some thrusters on it that one of them breaks off and it compromises the hull integrity of the thing. So they're like, "Fuck it, we got to do the goddamn tractor beam," which means we're all going to get cooked with radiation. And it's like not how radiation works, where the computer's just like telling them how many more minutes they have until they're dead.
Yeah.
So they're like towing this thing, and I guess this is one of those things where I felt like the thrusters must have made it start moving, and like inertia should have been doing most of the rest of the work, But I guess they have to get it through this asteroid field, so there's some steering involved.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to, like, irradiate the asteroid field also. So, I don't know. This is a very, like, MacGuffin-y plot line, I felt like.
Yeah, they could have called this episode, "You're Just Gonna Have to Trust Us on This One." And the one guy who's great at driving the ship through asteroid fields is concussed down on a planet somewhere.
Yeah, they don't even know where he is. So, in this cave, have attempted a new strategy of phasering the force field around this water fountain, because they're, like, desperate for water now. Like, if Picard doesn't get water, he's definitely going to buy the farm. And the first time they try it, it, like, knocks a phaser out of Durgo's hand, and it's, like, wrapped in spider webs.
These are selenium fibers, electrically deposited.
And so they try a second gambit where Wesley is going to shoot, like, a lower intensity beam, and Durgo's going to shoot a higher intensity beam. They're going to try and distract the cave wraiths that keep fucking with them. And this plan backfires big time on Durgo. It encases him in a ton of spider webs, and he dead.
Yeah. Yeah, true to his nature, he does something wildly unproven. He forces Wesley into it, and he pays the ultimate price.
Wesley comes very close to, like, to saying, like, "Stop not using science." and he pays the ultimate price, and so
as shitty as Durgo is, like, now it's just Wes. Because Captain McCard can't do shit.
And Wesley's, like, hitting this point of, like, near despair. Like, he goes and, like, leans over Picard, and Picard is on death's door, and he's like,
"Wesley, you'll see, I'm not long for this world. I'm dripping the blood out of the top of my head. Rudy."
He holds a pudding pop up, and it's, like, melting down his arm.
"My vital signs are melting." Blah.
That's how you can tell that Picosby's dying.
Wesley has this kind of long monologue where he explains to Picard that all of the hard work he's done on the Enterprise has been to try to impress Picard. Like, he basically tells Picard that he's been a father figure for him, and he just feels like this. He feels tremendously lucky to have gotten to know him and serve with him. And, you know, he talks about how he was intimidated by Picard at first, and but yet he always admired him. And Picard, you know, says, like, "Hey, listen, I've always been really proud of you. And when you go to Starfleet Academy, make sure you introduce yourself to the groundskeeper. He's great."
"He's one of the best groundskeepers, believe me. The edging is immaculate.
Believe me. It's got the best grounds. Everybody, everybody talks about how great the grounds are. The best grounds in the galaxy. Believe me."
I thought this scene was effective, very effective, actually. And it made me think that if you were starting from zero, Ben, and writing the quote-unquote last Wesley episode, you want there to be that moment where there's, like, truth in their relationship, like, where they finally say the things that they've been acting out the entire time. The fact that Wesley doesn't have a dad and Picard always has been that for him, and vice versa, that Wesley is the child that Picard never had, and that relationship needs to be underscored. I almost feel like you start with this scene as you're breaking this story, right? How do we get to a moment where they could actually do that? Well,
that's interesting.
You make one of them face death, probably, because neither of them are going to say it as long as they're at full health. To me, it just felt like write this part first and then write your way there.
Yeah.
So they have this scene, which is touching, but there's still shit to do. Wesley sort of verbally, like has last words with him, sort of sets the tone that Picard's going to die, but Wesley still has to live somehow, and it's all about getting to this water.
And he does a bunch of science and figures out a way to use the he uses the phaser to bring the Wraith out, and then the tricorder to turn it into a scribbly ball of confusion. And it's just like a lot of button mashing, it looks like. Kind of looks like a guy that's playing Mortal Kombat but doesn't know any of the combos.
He's doing like Mavis Beacon teaches typing. He's like, if he misses a letter, this Wraith is going to attack him. So his hands are on the home row. They're tapping away furiously.
And this Wraith really head faints, but it's like going right for him, but then it just goes through him, directly through his chest and into the fountain, and it drops the force field, and he's able to get a briefcase full of water that he takes back and gently drips into Picard's mouth.
Yeah, that was a fun choice, like as far as art directing that scene. Like we know there is a bottle. They have one of those. Why use the suitcase?
Well, there's still a little booze in it.
Yeah, I guess
so. Oh, maybe it was in Durgo's jacket at that point?
Oh, yeah. And when he got enrobed in the spider webs, they lost the bottle. Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
I don't know. One or the other. Captain Picard seemed to think that they could use the alcohol as coolant at some point. Which was like, oh, yeah, good point.
Hey, leave the mechanic work to Geordi, Picard. I don't think you know what you're talking about. You ever fill your radiator with alcohol? Not going to have a good day.
That's a DUI you don't want.
Sir, do you know why I pulled you over?
Your car smells like tequila, sir. I am the cutest of all. There are four lights. This episode ends with Wesley, like, passed out in the cave, and his mommy is waking him up, and Picard is being carried out on a stretcher. And throws a jab at Wesley, like, why do you look like shit, kid?
Yeah.
Wesley fires one right back, and they're all real happy that everybody got out of this scrape okay, and you know, Wesley was the hero.
That was the mirror image to the scene that opened the show. The scene opening the show was Wesley being totally deferential and getting his dog bigged completely. Mm-hmm. And at the end, they're both letting their dogs loose on each other a little bit.
Yeah.
They become more partners than master and subordinate.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. Did you like this episode, Adam?
Yeah, I did. Boy, like this, scenes in this episode walked right up to Saccharin, but didn't go all the way. And I think, in saying that, I mean specifically that scene where Wes and Picard, like, have their last words for each other. Like, that could have been an atrocity if they take it a little further than that. And they didn't. And Wes, as a character, and Will, as an actor, has had some challenging times making an emotional case that seemed believable.
Sure.
And good. And this was a moment where they rose to that occasion, and I thought they did a great job. So I think that is the moment in the episode that redeems everything and makes it good to me.
The biggest problems I have with the episode are the, like, dumb storyline that they used to get the Enterprise and the rest of the crew out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought the desert stuff was so strong. Like, it's so fun to see them on a planet that's, like, color graded differently.
Yeah.
You know, like, all, like, I guess that's probably not even grading, right? They probably shot that through, like, a tobacco filter or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's a more alien feeling planet than we typically get. Mm-hmm. And I imagine they probably went to Death Valley or something to shoot it. I mean, it just feels really really, really cool, and it's really, like, top tier production work compared to some of the other stuff we've seen. And I think the only thing it was really missing was a scene where Wesley was riding on the top of a bus with giant silken scarves flying behind him.
Yeah, I was missing that scene too. That's good headcanon though.
Yeah. Maybe he's not rich enough yet.
Oh geez. I just realized there's a light beeping on my keyboard, Ben. Lights don't beep, but this one does. It's saying this that we have a priority one message.
Could be.
Should I hit this button, Ben? Is the word given?
The word is given.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first priority one message is of a personal nature. It is for Ricky, and it is from Matt. And it goes like this, Ben. Since the early days on the USS Dumpy, it's been a pleasure to be a TNG fan with you, especially when the IPAs make us strong. And in parentheses it says, or turn us into drunk Shimodas. I'm glad that our wives put up with us. See, people write stuff about their wives like we're supposed to just believe them. Whatever. All right. I'm glad that our wives put up with us. Here's to another year, another 24-hour marathon. And there's another parenthetical that goes, as long as we don't have to watch Nemesis again. And the finest crew in Starfleet. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Ricky, from Matt.
That's a beautiful birthday message.
Really is. Sounds like they're doing marathons of the watching variety and not the running variety.
Yeah, 24-hour marathon. If you run a marathon in 24 hours, why even call that running?
That's probably the time that I would log.
Yeah, yeah,
for,
exactly.
For a marathon. That's out of shape marathoning.
I think these guys might have emailed me about joining one of these marathons.
Oh, yeah?
Not for the faint of heart, it sounds like.
Oof.
I mean, if they're throwing Nemesis into the mix.
What's tough about the whole Nemesis thing is that it comes so late in the marathon.
Yeah.
That is no reward at all.
But then you're like, wait a second, is that Tom Hardy? Holy fuck, that's Tom Hardy.
Boy, Tom Hardy.
Who knew that he was in anything before he was famous?
I will chase you to the end of the galaxy, Captain Picard.
Captain Picard, you adopted the dark. I was born in it.
Oh man! And then he just picks up Picard and breaks his back.
He kind of was born in it though, in that movie, right?
It's true.
He comes from that like vampire planet.
I still watch the Bane rap from time to time for laughs. That is a fun video.
Yeah, when you're having a week, just cue up that Bane rap.
All right, we have a second priority one message, if you can believe it, Ben.
Yeah, we do. It is from DeSoto. I don't know if that's the same DeSoto as Captain's the Hood, but it is to Shannon. And it reads as follows. As you fly the Previa with Ensign Finley, the boy, to Six Bay, know you're the best Dr. Crusher, compassion, hairstyles, Dr. Pulaski, grit, wharf attraction, and Tasha Yar, scarves. Finley is in the best hands, the greatest hands. There's no better hands than these hands, believe me. P.S. Worf's review of OI builds character, shitty parking. Man, I for some reason that was hard for me to read, like the rhythm of it was hard for me, but real funny, and I hope that is the DeSoto from the Hood, because that seems like a fun ship if it is.
I don't know that we've received a P1 with more inside joke references.
Yeah, that really packed him in, didn't it?
Well done, mm-hmm. DeSoto.
Mm-hmm. Good times.
Well, if you are interested in joining the ranks of DeSoto in purchasing a Priority One message, you can do so by going on over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It is $100 for a personal message and $200 for a business message.
Yeah, it keeps the lights on around here, keeps us in deuterium, and we really appreciate it.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I did. I got to give it to Jordy on this episode. I can't imagine why he would sign off on this ship.
I've run safety and operational inspections, Captain. Everything checks out all right.
Like, the picture when they come down to this to the shuttle bay is Geordi and, like, three or four other guys from engineering have been picking over this this shuttle. And, like, and he's like, yeah, it looks great, good to go.
Everything checks out all right.
No qualms about this situation. And when they discover that the craft has crashed, Geordi is like, well, the maneuvering thrusters did look pretty busted up on that thing. I'm going to go ahead and guess that that's what happened.
Yeah, good timing, Geordi. What in the hell? And like, it's carrying his captain.
Yeah.
A captain that 9 episodes ago, they almost lost forever.
Yeah.
So you'd think they'd be a little bit more protective of him. Don't get that
you
feeling.
You would think. Yeah. How about yourself? Did you have a Shimoda of a drunk variety?
For me, I'm giving it to Captain Durgo, the aggro jalopy miner dude. Who does
everything. He was getting drunk.
he does everything except turn to camera and go, I'm going to die. A horrible, horrible death. Just you wait and see. Like, he does everything to make the viewer hate him. And the other characters around him hate him. He's just a little too transparently aggro for me. Like, he could have dialed it back a little bit. And,
yeah.
Like, there's satisfaction in seeing a character you hate die. But I would much rather... I would much rather feel the opposite, which is see a character I like die. Like,
yeah,
how would it have been...
Or a character you hate redeem themselves in a way that surprises you.
Yeah, he was given neither opportunity... He was just, like, so much meat for the grinder, like, killed off unceremoniously and unsatisfactorily, like, felt kind of empty to me. So I think I'm giving his manner of death the Shimoda, just the, what was it even about, Captain Durgo?
What does it all mean, man?
Yeah.
Yarmouk and Jalad at Tanagra.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use. The products from Manscaped. Now this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology. With two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening, and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode of Star Trek The Next Generation is Season 4, Episode 10, The Loss. Counselor Troi resigns her post after experiencing a mysterious loss of her empathic powers. You remember that?
I remember this episode as being the Troi Gets Mean episode. And that's really all I recall.
Yeah.
She has that scene where she, like, screams and points at every one of the bridge crew. She's like, you don't understand what this is like.
Yeah. Is this the one where Guinan is like, you're not even that great of a counselor to begin with?
I hope so. I want to see that.
I feel like this happens a couple of times that she... am I wrong about that?
I don't know. I don't recall.
Well, we'll have to
find it. And we certainly don't read ahead, so it may yet be happening, but this is the first time on our show. One of the things, Ben, that I think gives our show meaning is the support that our viewers give it on the regular. Isn't that right?
That is true.
There are many ways that a viewer can support the ongoing production of our show. One of the biggest is by going to MaximumFun.org/donate and setting yourself up on one of them subscription plans, Ben. You can you can have regular donations given to us on a monthly basis, and that is probably the best way to keep this thing going. It will prevent our show from becoming like Captain Durgo's jalopy.
Yeah. The other great way to support is by going to iTunes or whatever app you use to obtain podcasts and leave a review or a recommendation of our show. It really helps, and people have really been going nuts on getting the iTunes reviews up there. That's been really, really tremendous and really helps, you know, raise the visibility of this show and keeps us in the style we've become accustomed to as the people's champion of Star Trek podcasts.
Yeah. Another way you can help support the show is by buying a t-shirt or going to one of our West Coast shows that that are coming up, Ben. I think to go out and do these shows and see these places filled with people, I think would be the biggest motivation for us to keep going. Like,
yeah,
I think it's one thing to produce the show in a basement over Skype. It is quite another to do this in front of people. And so I really hope we see all of you guys out there for these shows that we're doing.
True that. Well, we should thank our pals Dark Materia and Adam Ragusea for the music you hear on the show. And we should thank our beloved viewers. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and a super mean episode of The Greatest Generation.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.